Hello, my name is Scott Bradley and this is Scott Score Podcast. Today I'm delighted to be joined again by former Rangers manager Mark Warburton. We discuss the success of James Tavernier, who Mark signed 9 years ago, the job that Philippe Clement is doing at Rangers and if they can go on and win the league, the criticism that David Moyes is receiving at West Ham, who will win the Premier League, and could Jack Butland get called up to the England squad? All this and so much more. Enjoy the show. So, Mark, I'd like to kick off the show by thanking you for signing James Tavernier as he's having yet another unbelievable season. Of course, Mark, you signed him 9 years ago for Rangers. How proud are you to see how well he's doing?
Yeah, I'm just pleased for him. Pleased for Tav, pleased for his family. Someone that I know how proud he is to captain Rangers. You know, I watched him, as I've said before, Scott, I watched him speak so regularly with Lee Wallace, who was an outstanding captain. And I saw how much Tav spoke to him, and he would have learnt from Lee, he would have learnt from David Weir, obviously ex-Rangers captain at the highest level and European games. And, you know, Tav's a clever guy, but he's just a genuine individual. He has a passion for Rangers, so I'm so pleased it is where it is now. The armband means a lot to him, and he recognises the responsibility, Scott. That's what I like about it. From a playing perspective, and I'm not tempting fate, touch wood here, he's a manager's dream, you know, in terms of availability and playing minutes and the dynamism and athleticism that he brings to any team. Obviously, the goals goes without saying, but just a genuine all-round class act. So delighted for him and his family and hopefully many more seasons still to come, Scott.
And Mark, I actually feel like Tav has got better like with age than he has.
Well, he gets experience. You know, he's an athlete. You're going to say every footballer's an athlete, but there's certain guys you can see the dynamism that he has in his game, how he bombs forward, how he recovers, how he's available for the manager week in, week out. You know, with a European football game on a Sunday, game on a Wednesday, he's available, Tav. So, you know, he brings so much to the team. He's low maintenance in all the right areas. And I'm sure the impact he's having on the dressing room and the younger players will be tremendous, Scott. So just a genuine class act. So pleased for him. Really genuinely pleased for him. And I don't think you're going to meet a nicer individual. So, yeah, long may that continue.
And Mark, you see, after Rangers won the League Cup final and Tav scored the winner, senior were getting a lot of praise on Twitter from a lot of Rangers fans saying, thank you so much for signing Tavernier. How did that feel?
No, it's you're pleased with someone. You know, you know what it means to him. I don't want to repeat myself here. I've showered him in praise enough. He'll know that, Tav. But I just think for me, he's winning the reward, Scott, that his quality, his attributes, his desire, his playing service really merit. So delighted to see it. And I'm sure he wants to keep pushing. There'll be no, you know, you're in a short career. You're a magnificent club. Simple as that. And, you know, I'd be very proud to see his name on that Hall of Fame board, which I'm sure he'll deserve. Because he's worked so hard and given so much to the club, and he's likewise received so much from Rangers.
He's actually already in the Rangers Hall of Fame, so yes.
Oh, is he? I didn't even know that. There you go. I haven't been back. I was actually thinking of going back for the Old Firm game on the 7th. I haven't been back to Ibrox all that time, so I wouldn't mind seeing that. But no, in that case, then well played to him. But when you join someone like David Weir on that board, then good luck to Tav.
And it's going to be 33 this year, Mark, and we all know the numbers that he brings in. It's absolutely insane. But here's a bold question for you, right? You think it's too late for him to get called up for England?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is. And he won't mind me saying that. And who am I to try and prejudge what Gareth's going to do? But he brings so much. I think Tav has probably struggled or suffered in that respect because Rangers and Celtic dominate in terms of the football. And I think it's very, very hard when you try and gauge an England player. You know, when you look at, say, Trent Alexander-Arnold, obviously he's more of a midfielder now, but you look at Trent as an example and you look at what they bring and who they're facing week in, week out. And there's no lack of respect for the Scottish teams, far from it. You know that, Scott. But when you've got Trent and these guys, Conor Bradley, up against the Cities, the Uniteds, the Arsenals, the Tottenhams, the Chelsea's, week in, week out, Gareth is seeing his players tested to the highest level. And Tav will play for Rangers, and Rangers dominate the football 9 times out of 10. So I think that's probably held a little bit against him. And I don't mean he's not good enough to go there. Tav would go there and relish the experience, I'm sure, and bring so much to the squad. But I just think if you ask a question, I'll give you an honest answer. I think that ship had probably sailed.
And what do you make of the job Clement has done at Rangers so far? He's won a cup. in the last 16 of Europa League, have a great chance of making the quarterfinals, and Rangers are top of the league. Have you been impressed by Clement since he's arrived in Glasgow?
Yeah, I just like the fact he appears. I don't know, Philip, you know, and delighted to see how well the team are doing and he's doing. He appears to be low-key under the radar. He appears to speak well at press conferences. You know, he doesn't appear to be shouting and screaming. He just appears to be a very, very level-headed individual. So I've been impressed for sure, and I'd love to see the trophies come to Ibrox this season, Scott.
And the Rangers are also in a great position right now in the league. Do you think Rangers can finally go on and do it and win it?
Yeah, I do. I was asked, I was on Sky the other day doing the Kilmarnock game when Kilmarnock should have gone two up, if you remember. They should have gone two up, and in the end, Rangers came back and did what they, you know, did what they do. And I was asked that question then. And I just felt Rangers have the belief. I think the fan base has the belief that they've closed the 8-point gap. They're delivering a great, you know, the Benfica performance away. That's a tough place to go to, and they've delivered a really strong performance. So I think that confidence, desire, that belief will be growing. And Celtic have not been in the best position. Now, of course, they then come back that resounding victory over Dundee. You know, and then obviously both teams lose at the weekend, which was quite bizarre. So nip and tuck of the SPFL for sure. But I think the momentum is with Rangers. It will come down to the 7th of April. I'm sure it will do. Teams can slip up, as we've seen. But I think that game now becomes critical.
And Neil Warnock recently left Aberdeen after only 8 games in charge. Did that come as a surprise to you?
Yeah, only because I thought he was there for the season, Scott. You know, I thought the mandate, so to speak, was Neil wanted, you know, the comments he made at the start were to go up there as an interim through until the end of the season. That, I presume, was going to happen. So, obviously, something has changed his mind for whatever reason, or he's chatting to the ownership, and they've come to a right decision. But it appears to be very amicable. You know, Neil's got them into a good semi-final position, and I think you'll have enjoyed that. It'll have been frustrated, I'm sure, not to get more league points, but it's tough when you go in a short period. So, you know, whatever's happened there, I'm sure everyone is very amicable when everyone moves forward together.
Do you think Big Neil will be back in football again?
He loves the game, doesn't he? He loves the game. My teams have played up against him enough times to know his passion for the game, and his staff get very, very passionate, very involved, and he genuinely loves the game of football, Scott. So and he's a character, you know, and a game needs characters. So, yeah, I think he'll be pushing. Whether or not he get one, we'll soon find out. But there's no doubt he'll be pushing.
Have you got any brilliant Neil Warnock stories?
Neil Warnock stories. Not some I can put on the air here, probably. But who was the player? Neil would talk to us after the games about trying to buy one of his players and what they were worth. And, you know, you might be looking at 2 or 3 million. And Neil would say, you know, he's not going to leave for anything less than 12, 15, even 20 mil. And Neil would always talk the players up and do very well. But I always enjoy speaking to him because he's a passionate football man, Scott. You know, he would genuinely loves the game and talks to you about players and the game itself and owners and boards and just a football man. So every time I spoke to Neil after the game, win, lose, or draw, I always enjoyed that experience.
And on to West Ham Market, a club you were at last season. What do you make of the criticism David Moyes has been receiving from West Ham fans, with some calling him for him to go, despite him winning a Conference League last season and they're seventh in the league this season? What do you make of it?
Every bit of media I do, BBC, Five Live, Sky, you know, whatever it talks about, whatever it may be, this is the question that I'm continually asked. Not being rude to you. That's what I'm always asked, because you can hear the journalists and the media people somewhat bemused. You know, what's going on? Rangers, you know, QPR. West Ham are seventh, eighth in the table now. They've got the last 16, second leg, Freiburg this Thursday. They're 1-0 down, but they're going to be favourites to go through there. And, you know, careful what you wish for type scenario. I think the problem is Davies built such a strong, solid CV, magnificent CV. I mean, he's managed Man United. You know, he's done 11, 12 years at Everton. You know, what he's done is superb. I think there's a thing about, firstly, the West Ham way, which I don't know what the West Ham way, we hear it everywhere. You know, every club you go to, they're not playing the so-and-so way. Well, what is that way? You know, so I think their average position for the last 10 years, Scott, when I was there last year, was 10th. That was their average position. So therefore, to get into the Europa League, to come 6th and 7th, etc., was a fantastic achievement. I think, and this is not a criticism for 1 second, I think the fan base sees the money spent. And West Ham, you and I both know, West Ham haven't traditionally gone out and spent 100 and odd million quid, 130, 140, 150 million quid. And I think when they bought those players, David, obviously, you know, you look at the servants of Craig Dawson's, the Aaron Cresswell's, the Declan Rice's, you look at these type of players who have served him so well. And I think he's had those type of players, Scott, at previous clubs. And then you're bringing in people like Naya Fagard and Lucas Paqueta and Emerson Palmieri and Tilo Kehrer and Gianluca Scamacca. And, you know, you're spending 150 million. I think that the fan base perceives, or a large proportion of fan base perceives, Scott, that the style of play is going to change. Suddenly you're going to be Real Madrid popping it around for fun because you've got different types of players. But David knows the Premier League. You know, he's got vast experience in the Premier League. He knows what it takes. He's built his teams on being very solid, very hard to break down, compact, tough to beat, and then breaking and showing the quality, etc. So I think that's where it comes from. I think the West Ham fans think, you know, not the football fans. You know, it's like you go to the pub with your mates, Scott, and you talk about is Rangers and what the team should have been and could have been, and they should have won and should have scored and all the stuff that, which is what football's all about. I just think there's a perception now in amongst the fan base that they should be playing a different style of football. And, you know, David's being blamed with, not blamed, David's being accused, shall we say, of trying to change these flair players. But he knows what it takes to win. They're eighth in the Premier League. Now, they'll say, oh, we need to be top six as a minimum. Look at the teams up there. Look at the players up there. They've got a front line in Kudos, Bowen and Paqueta, which is as good as ending in the Premier League, in my opinion. Kudos is a rare find, you know, from Ajax at 40-odd million quid. Paqueta, for me, is one of the best players I've ever had the pleasure of working with and watching. Magnificent player. And Jared Bowen is outstanding, quite rightly, in the England squad, and he's scoring goals and he's setting his Premier League alight. He really is. So he's got a really good front line, and the West Ham fans know that. And I think they think they should be in a different position. So I think the criticism is very harsh. I think I'm not saying it's unjustified. It's bemused a lot of media people. But I can understand in a way why they're doing it, because they think the star is going to play. They've got to trust David because he's got such an outstanding CV and he's been there and done it in the game. So I think it's important to recognise, and to use that old man, the old cliche, be careful what you wish for.
And what was it like working alongside someone like David Moyes?
Yeah, David and I are friends for a long, long time. Purely by chance, Scott. I don't know if I told you this last time, but our families, David's got, you know, children, obviously my children are growing up, so is David's. But we went to the same hotel in Florida for years by chance. I was in the city. He's at Everton. And I never bothered him, but I was a British voice. And obviously, we started a chat and a pint and then a game of golf. And we started playing. And of course, football comes along and I'm in football and we're chatting away and doing everything else. So we started playing golf regularly. And then, as I said, I had two championship offers. And I had, David said to me, come and be my number two at West Ham. And it was a chance to work at the Premier League, work with the likes of Declan Rice and Bagatales, to understand the finances better of the Premier League, which is quite remarkable, Scott, it really is. But David, let me jump forward to answer the question, is I'm used to being a number one manager, as in I'm used to making the decisions, and I do delegate. I think I delegate well, and I've done that from the city, and you know, I've got a lot of years of managing desks and football teams. And I found that really hard. But I think David, likewise, has been very much hands-on. You know, this he does it. And I was finding myself getting bits and not enough. I didn't feel, as a senior person, Scott, I was adding enough value. And I'm at the stage where I need to do that. If I don't do that, I'm not enjoying it. And I just said to David, working with him, listen, he's a wealth of experience. I'm more of an attacking manager. He's more of a defensive manager. You know, I hope he learned bits from me. I'm sure I learned bits from him. So we did that very well. We remained good friends. Had I stayed on, I don't think we'd have remained good friends, Scott. And that was the conversation that we had. We ran the final on the Wednesday in Prague, got back Thursday, had the parade Thursday night, and I phoned him Friday morning and said, I think it's the right thing to do. So we remained good friends. I wish, you know, a good result, Brentford, et cetera. And I'll phone him up and wish him well and have a chat. And I always enjoy speaking to him and enjoy dinner and everything else. But as I say, it was a good experience, but it was a right call for me to make at the end of the season.
And who do you see win the Premier League? It's so tight right now, Mark. Arsenal, Liverpool and City. Who's your money on?
It's a big question. Yeah, I think you look at City with their experience, but then you look at Arsenal, who've got real momentum right now. You know, I'm loving seeing Declan obviously moving from West Ham to Arsenal, and all my mates, all the City boys are Arsenal fans, and they're all saying it's not worth 105 million quid. And I used to say to him, it's cheaper 105 million quid. Let me tell you. And now they're phoning me up saying we should have paid more and all these sort of comments. But great to see Declan doing so well. You know, going to be up there for Premier League Player of the Year, undoubtedly. Liverpool have had, again, like many clubs, Scott, have had many injuries. And yet, throwing the kids in, and Jurgen Klopp deserves enormous credit for the boys coming through, trusting the likes of Harvey Elliott, trusting the likes of Bradley that coming in, doing outstanding jobs. You know, they've lost a lot of big players for chunks of the season, as have many, many teams. City are there. You know, City are there and they're delivering results. And it's a magnificent. I'm not answering your question. I'm skirting around answering your question because it could be one of any. If I had to really choose one, I think City's experience in the final few games might see them over the line. But I think it's a magnificent title chase and looking forward to every second of it.
And Postecoglou's doing well at your boyhood club, Spurs, Mark, so he is, and he's on a great chance of getting the top four this season.
Yeah, and I love the freedom. You know, and you saw Villa at the weekend, how they came out and they played with a real freedom, and Villa changed their shape, which is interesting, to deal with Spurs. And maybe that backfired, and Unai has done a magnificent job this year, but maybe that backfired, Scott. But you look at the attacking talents. You know, you look at Madison's cleverness, Kulusevski, you look at Son. You look all over the pitch, Udogie's presence coming in. You look at Brennan Johnson's pace. You look at all over the park. But I thought on Sunday they had their strongest team out, and it showed. I thought they looked good. They looked cohesive. They looked fluid, and they looked very, very impressive, Scott. So yeah, they've got a real chance to push, but there'll be many teams around it likewise pushing. So I think the top six will go right down to the wire.
And I want to ask you about Manchester United, Mark, because it just always seems to be drama with them constantly right now. You're a manager, of course, as well. See, when you look at the Manchester United players right now, do you think they're really giving their all for Erik ten Hag?
I think this is, I hate, Scott. I don't mean you by this. I'm saying I hate when I hear idiots write, he's lost the dressing room. I've never heard so much bull in my life. They're professional players and you're playing for Man United. It is still one of the biggest clubs in the world. One of the top three, four clubs. It's huge. It's Manchester United, a global reach, a global brand. You go anywhere in the world and you see Man United shirts. So when you're a professional player signed by a club like Man United and there's suggestions that they're not trying and then, you know, the manager's lost the dressing room, I just think it's disrespectful. I think it's just ignorant in nature. I really do. It gets me, so as you can tell, I get angry even talking about it, Scott. I do think that there's been, obviously he's a top-class manager. You don't manage Man United without being a top-class manager. I do think maybe the off-field stuff with the owners, what's been going on before Sir Jim Ratcliffe came in, has been disruptive to Ten Hag. I think the recruitment could have been better. I mean, you obviously look, the obvious one is to, and I'm not being critical of any individuals here, but you're going to say Anthony is 80 and Kudos is half the price from the same club. So you're going to obviously say that, well, hang on a second, look at the impact on the Premier League. Now, Anthony may turn around and from the weekend onward, absolutely set it on fire. Who knows? There's no doubt there's quality there. But I think the recruitment, the off-field dramas, the expectation, all of this has probably weighed on United at a time, you know, injuries as well to their defensive line, losing like Martinez and these type of players, Shaw being out for lengthy periods. When you lose these type of players, I think this has a really negative impact. And as I said, at the time, you've got Liverpool, City, Arsenal, Tottenham clicking into gear. So, yeah, I think there's something not right. I think there'll always be rumours and expectations because it's Manchester United. It's huge. But certainly it doesn't look as fluid and cohesive, your last question, as Tottenham, for example, or Arsenal, who look to be in full flow right now.
And just on Chelsea's, Chelsea as well, Mark, after the League Cup final, they got heavily criticised for obviously losing that game because Liverpool had a team of kids effectively out. And then Gary Neville, of course, said that line, billionaire, what was it? £1 billion bottle jobs, that's what it was. Do you think that was very harsh from him?
Yeah, I think Gary Neville was very harsh. Far be it for me to speak for Gary Neville, but I think Gary knows it was harsh. And I think his comments in the days after it, you know, suggested as much. And then you look at the results since, and now suddenly they're pushing. Chelsea, a good win last night, 3-2. I think that for Maurizio and his staff, for Miguel and Jesus and Tony and those guys, I think that's a really tough job. And everyone's going to say, well, you've got world-class players there, but you've got a, I'm not saying a hodgepodge. It's almost like you've taken a load of young world stars and thrown them into a pot and said, right, away you go. And everyone knows, whatever the job, whatever the workforce, it could be a cab firm, it can be a school staff, it can be any a building site. You know, you need that staff to blend, and it takes time. And when you've got so many young players, when you've got different nationalities, when you've got massive pay salaries and egos to deal with, because you don't become a player at that level, Scott, without having that. You need that ego. I think the Muzio's, he just needs time to deal with that. I think now, the last night's result, weekend, etc., starting to click, a couple more good results, I think their confidence and their tails will be up. And in Palmer, by the way, in Cole Palmer, I do think there's a boy that will make Gareth's squad. I do think England are blessed with an unbelievable talent pool at the moment. When you look at the likes of Maddison, for example, and you look around and then you say, well, suddenly Cole Palmer comes along as well. You got Bellingham and you got Rice. You can reel off Kane and all these various Grealish and Phil Foden. You know, Phil Foden, magnificent for Man City. And yet Cole Palmer, every time I've watched Chelsea a lot for media, probably 7-8 times live this season, and he has been the standout performer each and every time. Now, they play him on the right sometimes, which, where Saka plays, and Foden can play as well. But he's at his best coming in, you know, coming into the 10 position, where, again, you've got the likes of Foden and you've got the, you know, various individuals. So, yeah, I do think that Chelsea will come. They'll come on strong. I think people like Cole Palmer are benefiting now from playing games and benefiting with working with the manager of Maurizio's class. And I think Chelsea will have a really strong end to the season, Scott. And it'd be interesting to see where they end up.
And obviously, you mentioned England squad there, Mark. I feel like this Euro's coming up is England's to lose, because that England squad is just magnificent. You talk about a golden generation. That is a golden generation right there. Do you feel as though England have a great chance of winning it this year?
And they've got a fantastic, you know, huge respect for Gareth and Steve Holland. I think, you know, the way they conduct themselves, the job they've done, because it's not easy. You know, when you have, again, you have all these various players and you've got to please the media and trying to juggle it all. And as a national manager, I'm sure you're constantly working with the clubs to keep everyone on side and appease everyone. And I think for me, I look at the England squad and it's just, you look back to moments in time, whether it's EPPP, for example, coming, you know, all those years ago, and the impact on the academies and the quality of players. But you look at the players that are being produced that are not making the squad, and it's staggering. You look at a midfield and you say, right, well, Rice and Bellingham probably pick themselves. And then you say, well, Trent Alexander-Arnold has been absolutely magnificent. And then you say, well, Foden can play in there. Well, hang on a second. So no one mentions Mason Mount, for example. Mason Mount, obviously injured, but £70 million to United. But it's not, you know, there's not many teams can afford to lose a star performer like Mason Mount and just go, yeah, but we have Foden, we have Saka, we have Palmer, we have Grealish, and just reel off these world-class players. So I think it's England in a magnificent position, and there's more younger ones coming through. Look at the performance of the, you know, the 21s with Lee Carsley and how well they're doing, Scott. So the production line, so to speak, is in great shape. John McDermott as technical director has done a magnificent job, and they really are going to be a force to be reckoned with. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and I'm not just saying this from a biased perspective, Mark, but see Jack Butland, he's having the season of his life right now. I think he's definitely within a shout of getting called up for the Euros this season. What do you think?
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I think Nick Pope's injury has hurt Newcastle and hurt England. You look at Ramsdale, you know, losing his spot to David Rea at Arsenal. Ramsdale had a magnificent season last year, if you think back, Scott. Obviously, Jordan Pickford. You look at Jordan Pickford, but Jack Butland is playing in goal. And that's one area where Gareth can compare. And he can look at the games where he's pulled off some tremendous saves. Even go back to the Kilmarnock game, you know, the one-on-one he pulls off, he's had a tremendous season. And he's, you know, he's upset a lot of people in terms of the way he's turned around his game and got back to his very best, thriving at a club like Rangers and the responsibility that comes with it. So, yeah, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him in the squad. And if he is named by Gareth, then it'd be fully justified, Scott, for sure.
And I forgot to ask you about this last time you were on, Mark. VAR, what's your thoughts on it? Do you believe in this the narrative that it's killing the game?
No, I don't think it's killing the game, Scott. I really don't. I did a piece for media at the weekend, and they're talking about time wasting. and how you do it and a shot clock. And I said to them, on Saturday night, I watched England versus Ireland rugby, right? And it was magnificent. The atmosphere at Twickenham, the game itself, the result, you know, down the last minute. But as a supporter watching it, I was never out of communication. I knew what was going on. The referee and the way he consulted with his linesman, the use of the big screen, and it only went over by 2 minutes in possession. And I watched everything about it, and it just flowed. For a game that stop starts, it had a real good flow about it, Scott. And then I'm watching the Premier League, and I'm watching, you know, you and I, you can look at it, and you can see obvious feigning of injury. I watch players look down, disgust at their counterparts, writhe and agony on the floor, and they haven't been touched. There's elements of the game that VAR can be used for. But right now, I just think there's so much at stake. There's so much criticism being levelled at individuals. They're almost scared to make a decision, if that makes sense. And I'm not criticising. I'm not at all. I fully appreciate the position they're in, Scott. But when you get one VAR call wrong, and the absolute, you get battered by every member of the media, press, radio, TV, everywhere. And they sit there and then they get relegated for a couple of games and you're sitting there thinking, wow, what do I do here? This is a huge call. And now it's coming down to the width of a fingernail, you know, that is offside. I just think at the moment we haven't got it right. Is it here to stay? Yeah, it's here to stay. Because, you need to see obvious things. But I do worry I don't think we as a game of football have got it right just yet, Scott. So no, it's not killing the game, but I think there's too much negativity around its current format not to have it change in the near future.
Yeah, because I don't know about you, Mark, but see every week when I watch like the punditry on Sky and stuff, it's like, see if there's a bad referee decision, it just dominates the whole post-match analysis. It's so tiresome. It's like, yeah, referees make bad decisions every week. They go for you, sometimes they don't. It's football, but it's getting really repetitive and redundant hearing the same thing every week, but it's like, oh, the bad referee call there, bad VAR call there. It's getting a bit tiresome.
The trouble with TV and photograph and footage is that you have stills. So you're stopping moments of the game. And you and I know there'd be a game where you go in for a tackle and at one moment that tackle looks bad. If you stop the camera at that 1 second, it looks shocking. Leave it for the rest of the clip to run and the guy might pull out or hold off or there's no contact or whatever it may be. But now referees go over and they see and they're being shown by someone in Stockley Park, they're being shown a still and you look at that still and go, oof, that's horrible. But it's not reflective, not a true picture of what actually happened. So I just think there's massive responsibility. We've got to find a way of the game flow and we've got to find a way. Is it right to put up 14 minutes on a clock? I don't think it is because you've got a game being played which is quicker. Look at that Man City-Liverpool game. Look how quick that game was and the atmosphere. When you start playing 103, 104 minutes, you're in territory of fatigue where the likelihood of injury to those top-class players is so high, Scott. So, so high. Especially when they got Champions League, you know, in midweek and whatever else. So I think that's not the way to do it. We've got to find a way of a stop clock, in my mind, where we have a minimum ball in play, say 55 minutes. And the fans, you as a fan, can be at Ibrox, you can see the stop clock. And if we're at 48, it doesn't matter what's left, we know we've got at least 7 minutes of play left because I'm watching guys take 45 seconds on a corner. You know, they're winning and they're going back and they're cleaning the ball and then they're throwing the ball and they're wiping it again. And that throw on just took 35 seconds. And then you have four substitutions and you're going, and then the goal celebration, you're going, well, they scored. There's a defender straight. There's a forwards walking back over there. That's taken 2.5 minutes to that. I'm now at 11 minutes and we're only 40 or, you know, 30 minutes into the half. You can't add on 20 minutes. We've got to find a way that the ball's in play, minimum amount, and the players know that and the managers know that. Otherwise, Scott, I'm not sure where we're going to go with the game.
Yeah, no, you're spot on, Mark. Absolutely agree. And just a wee bit off topic, I just want to ask you about your old mate, Joseph Barton. He's been in the news quite a bit recently regarding his comments on female pundits, commenting on the men's game. What's your thoughts on the route he's went down?
Listen, I'm not going to comment on Joey Barton, Scott. I'm really not. You know, Joey is a man. He'll make his own comments. You know, when you make certain comments, you're almost wiping out any chance of a career going forward in certain areas, I guess, is a polite way of putting it. You know, so Joey's made his call, and Talented in the media, not in terms of content, in terms of he's got good delivery, good speech. I've no doubt he's an intelligent individual, Joey. So this is up to you. It's not for me to comment on what Joey talks about, but let's just say we're two very different characters.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that, Mark. I feel like he can be his own worst enemy at times. And in my opinion, I don't see him managing again. I feel like he's too much of a PR headache for clubs. But that's the route he's decided to go down. But in terms of yourself, Mark, in the managerial front, I do remember you did say that you wanted to go back to America. But recently, have you had any opportunities, any offers that have appealed to you at all?
No, it's tough. I had one or two offers which were not right. One was just not right. Good club, good chairman. It wasn't right. But it's difficult. There's no beating about the bush, Scott. I think it's very hard at the moment. Football is a game that goes in fads and trends, whether that's in terms of managers and coaches, whether that's in styles of play. Whoever wins the Euros, that will be the preferred formation. All the work, all the data will come out about the 4-2-3-1 or the 4-3-3 or the 3, but whatever it may be. You know, Spain, go back Germany, then Spain and Holland and etc. So you have fads and trends. I think right now the trend is to go with younger managers. I think it's a little bit dictated by younger technical directors as well, who are more comfortable, should we say, getting the younger managers. So I think it's hard. I've no desire to retire at all. I look at my CV, not in an arrogant way, Scott. I look at my CV, I look at promotions and cup finals and playoffs, and I think, well, I've got a really strong CV. I've got a good win percentage. I've signed some good players. Go back over Brentford, QPR, etc. I'm a little bit bemused, if I'm honest. But that's just, you can't complain about it. You can't moan about it. You have to get on. You simply have to get on and wait for the opportunity. And in the meantime, keep looking at games, keep learning, keep talking to people, and just enjoy the game, because it's such a magnificent game, Scott. You want to make sure you enjoy as much as you possibly can.
And of course, Matt, as well, you're still in your prime. You're still in your prime as a manager.
Yeah, I'm fit. Listen, I've got the fittest dog in Hertfordshire, walking him over the woods every day, and you jump on a Peloton bike every day and do what you have to do. And I'm not one, Scott. I think I've got mates who, I'm sure you're the same, you've got mates who have retired and play golf every day and love every minute of it, and good luck to them. That's my worst nightmare, Scott. You know, when you get up without a purpose, without a challenge, without decisions to be made, and that, for me, it's just, at the moment, I feel very much a fish out of water. I'm very lucky. There's some people who are in a position and not working who really need to work. I need to work because it's what I enjoy. It's what I really, really, really relish and embrace. So yeah, a little bit frustrated, to be brutally honest, but you just have to be patient and talk to people, and hopefully they look at your CV and they give you the opportunity.
Hey, would you be open to a director of football role at all?
Yeah, I would. My only, this may sound really naive, and I hope it doesn't come across that way, Scott. When I hear director of football, I was director of football at Brentford. And that meant I was in charge of the first team, with Uwe Rosler. I was in charge of the academy. I was in charge of medical, sports science, analysis, coaching, etc. So I was in charge of everything. Loved it. Loved working with Uwe every day, with Ozzy, the academy director, Lee Carsley. Loved it. David Weir and I, we had a great 5 years. And you're in charge of the agents and doing all the bits and pieces. But now, I can ask you the question. As a fan, is the director of football that person in charge of the whole department, or is he really head of recruitment? Is he really just out to sign the players?
Well, from also me being a fan, looking at it, it seems like the director of football is someone who signs the players. They get the final say on who they're bringing in. Where the manager, well, basically the manager can recommend someone, but if the director of football says no to it, then it's not happening. But that's my perception of what that role entails.
See, I think for me, that's a bit where I have some confusion. I got offered and spoke about, would you go and do this director of football job? And I asked, what is it? And it turns out very, very quickly, it's just head of recruitment. Just go and basically sign. What do you know about foreign players? Go and sign them. Now, that's fine. That's part of the job with your recruitment team and your scouts and the owner and the technical panel that you set up and everything else. But I think people just now, fans, especially supporters, media, just see the director of football or technical director as being the guy that goes and signs these superstars, signs them for two bob and sells them for 25 mil. That's the perception. And I'm not really sure. For me, I wouldn't want to just be a head of recruitment. I'd like to have the responsibility of overseeing a football department. Am I open to it? Of course, I'm open to working in football, but I need to be in a position, Scott, where I can add value and impact some positive change, I hope.
And the last question, Mark, what would you say your proudest moment has been as a manager?
Oh, proudest moment. The obvious one is Rangers because it's the biggest club I've had the privilege to manage. So in terms of the promotion and the semi-final, etc., you're gonna highlight those type of things. But I think for me, one of the very, very proud ones was getting Brentford promoted with Wolves. Wolves, a massive club, went up, and when I went into Brentford, they were 18th in League One, and obviously did the director's role with Uwe, which was great, a great friend, and then I took over. In November, and as I say, I think it was sixth, and at the times, and to get over the line and get promotion with Brentford, and then to take them up, and then to come fifth the following year, and everyone said we were red hot favourites to be bottom of the league at 24. I think they put Brentford, Rotherham, whoever it was, and then we came fifth, and we just missed out to Middlesbrough of the Premier League. I mean, you look at that. That to me is probably has got to be because that really sets you up. I would never have got Rangers without achieving that at Brentford. So, yeah, that's probably has to be the proudest moment because it's, you know, to do it at a small club like that against the odds was really pleasing, Scott.
Hey, Mark, pleasure as always. Thank you very much for coming on, mate. I really appreciate it.
No, Scott, pleasure. Thanks for the questions. I'm always welcome. As I say, give me a shout anytime.
Thank you very much for listening to the show. If you want to listen to more episodes of Scott Score, they're available on Apple Podcasts and SoundCloud. Until next time, take care and we'll see you soon.